Alright, let's kick this pig off.
891. Here we go. Pow!
Who's the best show here?
Tech Show!
Who's the best show here?
Tech Show!
Alright, that's pretty good. That's the best one yet.
Pizza, pizza.
That's kind of fucking weird, but okay.
Big O! Showtime!
While you were making egg foo young in the kitchen, I was in the dining room having sushi.
It's a little thing tech show, and that's a fact. If you don't like the cast, you can stick it up your ass. Ain't no funny duddies that are linking bad. For the streaming, go direct to DLNTS.org. And IC channels at LinuxTech.net. Bound tech show. Just sit right there, cause the castle's just about to begin.
Welcome to episode 891 of the Linux Sling Tech Show. On the show tonight, we have Pat.
Good evening.
We have Joel.
Hello.
The Joel Train. And we have Joe.
Hello again.
Yeah. So, I found out something interesting yesterday. And I never really talked about this, but I stopped listening to podcasts in March of last year.
I was
6 months behind, and I was like, that's when the whole pandemic hit, and I was like, fuck, I just don't want to deal with anything, you know, listening to pre and then the build up and going through, you know, listening, all that, just like reliving the whole pandemic crap and stuff. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to stop with the podcast for now. And I'm going to just listen to music for a while. And I went and I just played music on my runs and workout and everything. And
what are you listening to?
Oh, no. I listened to everything I had. Like, I started at, I was listening usually on Shuffle or Random, but then I'm like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go, I have, like, all these albums on this SD card. I'm just going to start at the first album, go through all the artists and albums in alphabetical order, and just see how long it took. And it took me until, like, winter, like a couple of weeks ago, I had finally gotten through everything. And
did you listen to Rush 2112?
No, I didn't. I don't have any Rush. Sorry. I didn't have any Rush on there. I have, you know, all sorts of stuff. I didn't have any Rush on there. But anyway, I said, all right, I'm going to start listening to some podcasts again. Blah, blah, blah. And come to find out, one of my favorite shows that was that they stopped doing, like, in 2016, I think it was, did a quarantine special, Games and More Entertainment Radio, back in March 23rd, and I had missed it. I'm listening to it now. It's the first one I'm listening to again. I was like, I really dug it just to hear them again for and I'm almost a year late, so I don't know if they still listen to us. I just wanted to give them a shout out and say, hey, that's great. But boy, when I fired up Bash Potter and I have like
a few geeks,
a ton of shows. So
that's where you really should, there's some podcasts, like one that I listen to. Well, I could listen to daily, but sometimes I will skip it just because, you know, maybe because I don't notice until the next one's about out or something like that. So I usually, depending on what it is, I usually just delete it. You know, mark it as played and delete it. But yeah, it's funny you mention podcasts. But our good friend of the show,
there you
Dave Gates. That's a good segue. Dave Waits has revived not the podcast, but the lotoflinuxlinks.com website. More or less a blog.
And there's postings on it.
This year, even.
From this, yeah. So he's got. Let's see. His apparently. Last one, oh, go ahead.
I say his last one was about Mastodon, which he's on Mastodon as well. I believe. I don't know if he's on Fox. I guess it doesn't really matter because all you have to do is let's search for DS Yates and you'll find him in the Fediverse.
Yep, so he's got a post from, I think, starting December 26th, where he says he's back again and all the way up to now.
I'm back again, maybe. But, yeah, he and I and Link have been chattering back and forth at each other on Mastodon via, I think he might have set up, I have to go back and look, I use, for Mastodon, I use a app for Android called Tusky, and I think I use one called Tootle on Tootle. I have to go look and see what it is on my iPad. But Mastodon is a decentralized social network, so you can literally set up your. It's kind of like what was it? Status.net.
Yeah.
It's kind of like that, ESP, where you can set up your own server. Yeah, an Identica, right. So I think what he may have done was set up his own instance. But I'm on Fostodon, and I don't know who – Claudio's on there as well, which he says ClaudioM at mastodon.sdf.org. Link, I think Link also just put up on Fostodon, I think. But Fostodon is a free and open source based Mastodon. And because everything's federated, you can, like, Adam Curry has his own setup for the No Agenda podcast. So he has their own Mastodon instance. And, that's, you know, we could set up our own too as well. But John Watson is on the Fediverse as well. He's at John W at hackers.town. But the nice thing is you don't have to be on any specific instance as long. I mean, you can, like, certain instances will block certain, like, for example, because anybody can set up a Mastodon server. You can have a bunch of races set up. So if it's found out that, you know, that instance is used for nefarious things, some federated ones will block those. But generally, most people are pretty friendly. I haven't had a problem with anything like that over there. So, but the very great thing is it's decentralized. If the instance you're on goes away, you can just start an account somewhere else. Or build your own server, since it's open source. But,
Fostodon. What are you on, Fostodon or Mastodon?
Fostodon. That's where mine's at. In fact, let's see, I'm Gorkon, so you can find me. Pretty easy. And doesn't really feel like Facebook, or it feels more like Twitter to me. Instead of tweeting, you're tooting. That's what they call it. But it's very bare bones, and much. I think it's pretty nice. I think it's nicer than MeWe, but that's just my opinion. MeWe, I'm actually kind of surprised who has signed up for MeWe. I've had several friends from my church that have signed up on MeWe. And that's part of the reasons why I'm not completely, well, I probably never will be off Facebook, at least until I – it's just the thing about social networks is, you know, you might like – like, for example, we've been on MeWe for a while – but we still have accounts elsewhere because not everyone's there, which is part of the problem.
Yeah, know, I do have an account on MeWe, but you know, I'm never going to convince my grandma to move off of Facebook.
Exactly.
Move over there.
Yeah.
Move over there.
Exactly, and that's part of Facebook. The problem with it.
Well, thank you.
Oh, I know. Your account's gone now, I noticed.
Yeah, I deleted it.
I basically use Facebook to stay in touch with my family, and occasionally I will post something. But I do look at Facebook Marketplace quite a bit.
I actually found out something a little bit disturbing on Facebook. There is a setting, you can search for it in your privacy settings, but there is a setting.
Off Facebook?
Yes, tracking activity off of Facebook. I actually cleared all my activity on that and set that so it wouldn't collect that activity anymore. So, at least they give you that option. So, because I don't, if I'm not on Facebook, I mean, I'm okay. Like if Facebook pays a certain, ad agency or ad company, and they use tracking cookies, those don't bother me as much. But you know, when the Facebook is literally telling me right there and then and there that they are tracking me, I'm like, you know. So, and I disable that just because I don't want them, you know, it's not any of their business what I'm doing on websites outside of Facebook. So, Fostadon's pretty cool. And Seam Deviates, someplace where we can chatter at them and active, has been fun. So I miss Dave. He's a great guy.
A lot of Linux links. .com.
I love it. Somewhere in that blog, he talks about how he started recording that podcast in his Honda Civic.
What is that?
And Joe's probably never listened to his show.
Which show?
A Lot of Linux Links podcast.
Nope, never listened to it.
Yep. That was before his time.
Joe was a young boy back in those days.
How long ago?
2003, 2004-ish?
Well, I was already out of the military.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Fostadon. I have to put it back on my phone again.
I've been using the Brave browser. It's pretty good. I like it.
There you go. That start. Did Brandon Ike start it, or did he just fund it?
I think he started it.
Yeah, after they kicked him out of it, Mozilla.
Yes. Pretty good. It's actually faster than Mozilla. It's pretty nice.
I tried it on my iPad. It was pretty good there, too.
You can import all your bookmarks and all your settings and everything from Firefox, and it's pretty good.
There you go.
It's faster. It's seamless. It's good. I like it.
The only thing I'm not sure, I haven't tried long enough, but can you sync links between them?
I don't know.
Okay. Like if there's an Xmarks plugin or something like that, because that's what I remember. I used to use Xmarks when I was Firefox.
I think all the Mozilla plugins are compatible with it.
Well, that's good. Then maybe Xmarks might work. Because I liked Chrome because that was just part of it. And I know that they recently change something with the open source version.
No idea, but I'm looking to get Google out of my life as much as possible.
I'm get done. You Librem 5.
All right, so Brave is Chromium-based. That's right, so...
Yeah, and what Alphabet is blocking Chromium from being able to use sync features.
Sync features of
okay.
what?
Okay, Chrome. That's what it was. Yeah,
Chrome style sync features.
Yeah, you can't log into your Google account and synchronize your links.
Links and extensions.
Yep.
Your bookmarks. Yeah, it's good on the phone, too.
Oh, so you mean, like if I log into Chrome on one machine and log into another on another, I can sync all my
bookmarks
shit across
the
two.
Right.
But if
right.
I run a non-Google-based browser, if I try Chromium or something else, it doesn't allow that?
Correct. As of recently...
Yep. Huh. Very recently.
Yeah, I've been using mostly Firefox, so. What?
See, at work, it's weird. At work, we use a lot of Okta stuff.
Right.
And we have our internal corporate Okta, which is most everything, but we have an external, like, one that that our customers can use. And we also have accounts over there so that we can go look up some of the same resources that they have. All right, I cannot for whatever reason it is, and there that part is actually based on Salesforce. But for whatever reason, I'll load up that Okta site to log in Chrome, and it will not let me go. It basically doesn't go through into Salesforce for whatever reason. So the only way I've gotten that to work is use Firefox.
Oh, interesting.
And what's funny is I have that problem, but some of my coworkers don't. I don't know why I have that problem. But
well, hey, at least you don't have to use Internet Explorer, right?
Well, not
or
it
Edge.
Wouldn't be that anymore. It'd be Edge.
That's right.
In fact, it's funny. We have some older, you know, we have some 2012 boxes for some of our clients yet. Eventually, we're starting a project to both migrate them to newer versions of the OS and to new VPCs, which are more modern AWS VPCs. And we on those 2012 boxes, because IE won't work with our product anymore, we load up Chrome or Firefox. So... yeah, fun stuff.
what was the opera? I don't want to say opera. I don't know if the correct word is opera based, but it was. Oh, Vivaldi. That's it.
That's right, Vivaldi.
I haven't used that in a long time.
Now I want to know is how can I use GTK4 since it's now released.
Can't you do it in your?
Well, I don't know if they release a GNOME version side by side it. Otherwise, it would be easy. Like if they do have GNOME 4 out, then that would, you know, that would be an easy way to do it. If I can load GNOME 4 on top of Ubuntu. I think KDE just had some updates to Plasma as well. Yeah, you can tell.
I can tell you how you can run it.
Oh yeah.
Install Arch Linux. It'll be in there.
Oh, of course it will. Yeah. Actually, KDE Plasma 5. 2.0.5 was released January 5th.
January 5th.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't know because I'm not running that. I'm not running those newfangled browsers. I mean, those newfangled desktop systems.
You don't have the horsepower for it, do you?
I'm with my Fluxbox and my Icewind Omega. And what am I using over here? I don't remember.
I think the XFCE.
XFCE and I do have I do have GNOME on Ubuntu. And I do have LXDE, I believe, on a laptop over there.
It's funny. Where was I? I was on Facebook in one of the Linux groups, and somebody says, they should switch Ubuntu's desktop from what it is to KDE. And I'm like, Kubuntu, hello? Tell that was by a Linux noob.
So how do you like Red Hat 8 on your laptop?
I haven't played with it too much. I'm actually on my normal laptop I'm using that I have Ubuntu. I'll have to play with it a little bit more. But I can tell you, since the last time I installed Red Hat on anything, which was a long time ago, unless it was a server, but it's the Anaconda installer is every bit as good as it is over on Fedora, and you choose workstation and it just installs nice and easily. It includes network manager, so it's easy to get Wi-Fi. It's not like it used to be, you know, which is really Linux as a whole. I mean, I don't remember the last time I tried to get something specific working, unless you count the weird stuff with...
unless you're working with some really odd hardware.
Yeah, or like the laptops with the NVIDIA card plus the Intel card at the same
time.
No.
The hybrid graphics is actually working a lot easier than it used to be.
Is it?
Okay, I mean, immensely. It will just work.
Will it switch into Fly? Because that's one thing you really didn't get with Linux that you got on Windows. It's been a long time since I tried. I have a laptop that has that situation. My Lenovo's like that. But it's kind of like my backup editing station right now.
Yeah, I'm almost ready for a new gaming laptop.
Yeah.
Or new to me gaming laptop.
I'm kind of right there too, and I'm sitting here looking more and more, and not necessarily for gaming, just because I want something that can actually edit 4K video. I can edit it on the machines I have. But the render time is ridiculous. So, but I'm looking, and I at one point I was thinking, well, why don't I build a desktop, or why don't I buy a desktop after we get moved into the new place, because I'll actually have the space to set it up. And more I'm looking and say, well, if I buy a new desktop, I have to buy a screen. So why am I buying a desktop? Why don't I just buy a nice gaming laptop? They're a little bit cheaper, too.
You can get a TV easy enough.
And then attach a TV to it for those times when I want to edit. And yeah, because I'm definitely going to get TV for that space, too. That's probably going to come before a laptop. But it's like, what do I want to do with that? So... I actually watch them. Do you ever watch any of Jay's Two Cents?
Occasionally, not very often. I tend to watch a bit more Linus Tech Tips.
Okay, I've watched some of his stuff too. He just had, I think it was yesterday, or maybe sometime this weekend, a review of one of the first laptops with the GTK 3070 in it.
Yeah, and Linus did as well. And from what he's saying with the power restrictions and the heat restrictions, you might just be better off going with a 2070 or a 2080 laptop.
Well, yes. I mean, I'd say yes and no. I mean, because if you're buying a laptop with a 3070 in it and the 3070 RTX in it, and expecting it to perform as well as a desktop variant of the 3070, no. But that now, in my case, yes, because I'm not buying it for pure gaming. I'm buying it because I want the CUDA cores to throw at the graphic renderers. So, you know.
Well, even still, they cut back heavily on the number of CUDA cores to limit the power usage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and that particular one was the MSI GP76 and GP77. They're about $2,000. But, and I'll say the upside on, well, see, and that's the other thing I was noticing too with some of the gaming laptops was, and I think this is the same, where they have a 1080p screen in it, not a 4K screen. Granted, a laptop with a 4K screen can be a pain in the ass. Because even Windows has issues scaling sometimes. But those two MSI laptops come with 32 gigabytes on board. So, and there's also something to be said, at least for what my reasons would be, about looking at M1 based devices over an Apple. Because even without the Creative Cloud stuff being tweaked for the M1 chip, they're still getting better performance than some of the Intel chips. So,
you know, one of the things I always have a problem with anymore under Linux is network or Wi-Fi management from the command line.
Good luck.
Because I don't do it very often. Like, I do it very rarely, and I just forget what to do. And apparently now it's so much easier than it was a few years ago, because you could, like, just use NMCLI for Network Manager CLI if you have a Network Manager installed, which I do. But it's been so long since I had to deal with any of that. Then I always forget what to do when I have to.
Just works, don't it?
Well, yeah, especially if you're, you know, if you just fire up X and, you know, connect that way, it's not a problem. The only time I ever have that issue is like when I'm installing like a headless server. And I got to remember how to manage the network stuff, because it's like, it used to be really simple, and then they changed. Well, I mean, I used to know how to do it in one way, but then they changed a lot of that around. And
well, they changed how they referred to network cards, and not just WLAN 0 anymore. It's like weird.
Yeah, and I get that. It's just like I used to know how to do it and set it up, and like I bet you Slackware is kind of still the same way. And they kind of change like that, those scripts and stuff, and on Debian and even in Red Hat, it's a little different than what I was used to. And since I don't, like I said, I don't do it that often anymore. It's always it's not that hard. It's just got to get in there.
The old ifconfig. Well, I think ifconfig still works, but the real command that you should be using now is IP space adder to find your IP addresses.
Yeah, I use that. I've switched to using that.
Or just IPA.
Yeah, a long time ago.
Yeah, IP space A, and that shows you all your network cards' addresses. So, and like, my LAN card on this one is WLP2S0. I'm like, what? Okay. Oh, I must have Docker on here too, because when I did IP space A, I see a Docker 0 on there as well.
Wait, your card is just WLP? Because I have both ENP.
No. WLP2S0.
Well, yeah,
and I have, then I do.
I have WLP1S0, and I have ENP2S0, right. And they both and have the same IP address.
Well, see, and that's the other wild thing too is you would expect that since we only have one, I only have one Ethernet card and one wireless card in this system. But so you would expect that my my wireless LAN would probably be similar in name on the old system that it was, like it was always WLAN 0 if that was the only card in there. But it's completely different. My name of my network card is different than the name of your network card, but it uses the same schema. And my regular Ethernet is EMP3S0F1.
Wait, I'm mistaken.
That's my
EMP, my wired and my wireless do not have the same IP address. They're off by one.
Of course they're not. Yeah, they shouldn't. Yeah.
I thought.
Oh yeah, but you have them both hooked up.
Yeah, they're both going. Why not? If I got it, I might as well use it all, right?
I don't have enough. That's one of the things is I need to buy. I'm probably going to buy it before I move. I might buy it soon. I have the either that or I guess I could swap it with the one in the living room because the one in the living room is an 8-port switch. The one in my office is only a 4-port switch. And that's the one I hooked up initially when we first moved in here. But I'm thinking about picking up I think a Netgear 16-porter I think I'm going to pick up for like $60. Geek switches, of course. But I definitely need new switch. Plus some of my Ethernet cables are pretty hoked. Like they didn't have like you can buy patch cables with the like snag free RJ45s on the end. Most of the ones I have here aren't that. So like one of the cables I have in the office here had the tab is completely gone from the plug. So it's like, you know, 5 network patch cords, 5-foot ones on Amazon for like $10, and I didn't have to spend any money to get it because I used good points from work. Yeah, I'll do that rather than try and make my own. So. But I do generally, especially for my work laptop, I'd rather have it wired than wireless most of the time. I mean, it's not that bad considering that all my laptops I would be using the 5 gig network. So it's not like when you only had 2 gig Wi-Fi, somebody would go microwave a corn dog and you'd lose connection.
Nice. Now they should air fry that corn dog.
Air fry it. I air fried hot dogs tonight again for dinner, and it was delicious. Rich bombs. Although I went digging in the cupboard and realized, oh, I don't have any hot dog buns, so they were ghetto hot dogs on a piece of bread.
There you go. Folded in half, piece of bread.
A little bit of mustard on it. It was delicious. And I air fried them a little longer than I did last time. I think I did them for like 18 minutes at 400.
Uh-huh.
Didn't burn them, but it put a nice crust on them. Oh.
Like a little snap on those things. You bit into it. Snap it off in your mouth. Say it, Joe. Snap it off.
Quarter pound snap of meat it in off. His mouth.
Quarter pound of meat in his mouth.
That's it.
There you go.
Woo.
I actually bought a box of cereal last week when I was at the grocery store because it looked interesting.
What was it? Hot dog cereal?
No. Little Debbie oatmeal cream pie cereal.
Oh my god.
Just add hot dog water.
Was it good?
It was Yeah, I wouldn't say it tasted exactly like those cream pies, but
did you get a little Debbie cream pie?
No.
You can get one. You could have gotten that for free on Pornhub, man. A cream pie?
Pornhub.
Sorry, that was inappropriate. Sorry, Joe.
I'll survive.
That's right.
I have a question, Joe. Maybe you can answer this. Because I'm not finding it. Like, I get... Like, WLP... I'm assuming stands for wireless on the PCI bus. Right?
Right.
I have no clue.
Oh, okay. So... I'm trying to figure out what the EN was in ENP. And I think it's Ethernet. Ethernet. Oh, wait. Yeah, Ethernet.
Port? Ethernet port?
Well, no, the P stands for PCI bus. It's on the PCI bus. So the naming structure is like ENPXSY, where P signifies it's a PCI device. And it's on the PCI bus X in slot Y. So this is saying my Ethernet, which I believe is what EN stands for, my Ethernet's on the PCI bus 2 slot 0. So that's why it's ENP2S0. And then wireless... WL on the PCI bus 1 slot 0.
Makes sense to me.
And then VIRBR0 would be virtual bridge 0, which
goes to your VM.
Which I'm assuming is probably in there because I think I have VirtualBox installed. Yes, I do. And I think that's set up for VirtualBox. And the VirtualBox. VIRBR0-NIC. So the bridge and the NIC. Bridge NIC in there. Or whenever I fire up VirtualBox, which I haven't done in a long time. Anyway, sorry.
And this is so... And just from a quick Google search, this is so wireless adapters would have the same name every time you reboot?
Yeah. This is so it's a predictable network interface name. Which I don't mind, yes. You know, it's fine. Whatever. So long as that
yeah,
same device...
Yeah, I don't care, as long as I can figure it out. Yeah. At least, if the whole name doesn't make sense, at least EN indicates, well, that's Ethernet, and WL is wireless, so you know those two are pretty much okay. You know, who cares whether it's P2S0, you know? So, as long as you know how to look them up, which is IP space A.
You know what was...
A or golden. In fact, the old ifconfig will still work, too. But
you know what was a pain in the ass is when they started transitioning to that, and Arch Linux kept flipping back and forth for me, where...
Oh, it did that?
Yeah, one like, I do an update, and it would switch to the predictable network naming, and then I'd do another update, and it would switch back. And then system control was set up that it would do, like, originally it was, like, start up and do DHCP on the ETH0 device. So the system would come up, and it would just hang there trying to find the ETH0. And then it would, like, sit there for 3 minutes, and then it would finally get past. It would just can't do it. And then I have to go in and change that to ENP, whatever my device was, and then the fucking do an update, and it would switch back to ETH0 again, and I have to go. That was a pain in the ass when it was flipping like that. But that hasn't happened in years.
Oh, and actually, we were talking about the next version of GNOME before. It's not GNOME 4, it's GNOME 40.
40?
Yeah.
Wow. Why?
I'll paste a link from OMG Ubuntu into the mumble chat here. and IRC.
When's that supposed to come out?
That's a good question. I'd like to play with it. GNOME 40 will be the next stable release.
It's to simplify the unwieldy numbering. Dropping the three prefix underlines the fact that GNOME 40 is set in technologies. Okay.
Actually, well, it would technically be GNOME 3.4 is what they're saying here. So basically, GNOME 3.4 will be based, or GNOME 40 will be based on GTK 4. And GNOME 40 is released for, is scheduled for release in March of 2021. So I don't know if it's going to be in the next version of Ubuntu or what.
I don't understand that. Like, I have been brought up that when you have a major, there's major, minor, and patch release, and when you have a major release, that is a significant change. So, So I don't understand why. Like, I get the fact that, like, I knew when they went from GNOME 2 to GNOME 3 that that was a big change. And when they went and then going from GNOME 3 to GNOME 4, I would expect a big change. I don't get what, like, I don't get why they have to do 40.
Well, you know, GNOME, well, it's technically, if they kept the old naming scheme, it would be GNOME 3.4. But they're dropping the 3 point.
As why would it be 3.4? Why couldn't it just be GNOME 4?
Because it's not GNOME 4. Because it's basically just evolution. They haven't made a. They're not making a major jump, as I guess is what they're saying here. But speaking of which, GNOME 40 will not be included in GNOME 21.04. Which is, by the way, they already have the animal name for Ubuntu 21.04. Hirsute Hippo. So, and Ubuntu 21.04 will also not have GTK 4. So, anywho.
That, all right, so reading this from the article, dropping the three prefix underlies the fact that GNOME 40 is set of technologies different to those introduced back in GNOME 3.0, but not to the degree that would warrant a GNOME 4.0 branching. And with GTK 4 on the way, there's a chance things could get a bit confusing for users and developers.
And personally, I don't see how GNOME 3.4 or GNOME 40, whatever you want to call it, is going to be that different than GNOME 3.
Well, so I don't, again, I don't get it. Why would you say, well, we can't call it GNOME 4 because it's not, it doesn't warrant a major release change, but it's different
from
GNOME
3. But you're calling
GNOME
40. And yeah, then you're calling it something stupid like 40. It's like, come on. Yeah, crazy. Hirsute Hippo. Just get off Dan's lawn.
I mean, Then you're gonna like. Then you have the confusion of, well, what do you have? GNOME 3, GNOME 40, GNOME 4, which, like, It seems so confusing. I like this comment. We're introducing a couple of new technologies, so calling it 3.40 would be a bit confusing, but it is still not 4.0. What should we do? I know. Instead of a bit confusing, let's make it entirely confusing and call it 40. Perfect. Yeah.
And to be honest, the heavier interfaces for X, I like GNOME better than KDE. Past KDE 2, I never really liked KDE 3. And I definitely don't like 4 and 5 so far.
I don't mind KDE. I like Plasma. That's pretty cool.
It's not horrible, but...
You know what I don't like about GNOME? I don't like... For some reason, they up and decided, well, instead of switching virtual desktops right and left, we're going to go up and down.
which doesn't really make a lot of sense when you think about it.
Why? I mean, I've always been used to right and left. Why are we... Every other window manager and every other, like, desktop environment is right to left, but GNOME has to go up and down. Maybe that's why I don't use GNOME anymore.
Well, here comes another Ubuntu-based distro too. I just went to the main OMG Ubuntu page, and one of the top stories is a new touch-inspired or iPad-inspired Ubuntu-based distro. It is called GingOS.
Would you post that in the chat?
I will.
How's that spelled? Oh.
J-A-I-N-G-O-S.
Is that the new distro inspired by the Apple iPad?
Yes, sir. Maybe worth loading on a touchscreen-based device.
Oh. Exclusively for tablet device. Those shitty devices that... promise the world and deliver, except the Jive. The Jive was great. And what does Joe say to Transformer?
Yes, the EPC.
Well, I did used to use the Transformer, but I switched to that from that a while ago to the, what was it, the Dell Venue 11 Pro 7130.
Yeah.
Running Linux?
Yeah, this.
Yes.
And it works really well?
I have a 7130 and a 7140. The 7130 runs better on Linux just because it goes to it has a sleep function, and the 7140 doesn't.
Ooh. I might have to try this GingOS on the Surface Pro 6 because it says it's supported on it. I'll have to boot off a thumb drive, though, because I'm not waxing my Windows partition on there. Yeah, the actual first release of that is supposed to be the 31st, so in a few days.
Is this... What are you going to be able to install it on?
Well, according to their website, it says it's compatible with the Surface Pro 6, which I happen to have, and the Huawei MateBook 14, and there's also a whole list of compatible devices. I'm guessing probably a lot of Surface devices. I'm wondering if it worked on the old TC1100. Remember those? The HP TC1100.
Oh, check compatible devices. You know what? This is
that's the only two listed.
Here's my problem. Here's my problem with, like, I love the idea of a tablet, and I'm like, oh, I would love, you know, tablet is like almost perfect, but then I'm like, but if you want, if you're gonna get a tablet, if you're gonna get a tablet, you gotta get a, you're gonna have to spend money to get it, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can't just buy you can't buy a $100 tablet and expect it to work well.
Nope.
What? Nope. What do you mean? No.
Incorrect. I paid $40 for the 7140, and I paid $75 for the 7130. Now, granted, I bought them as non-working because the people that had them didn't know what the hell they were, or you know how to power them. But after I spent another $20 in power supplies, they started right up.
Okay.
And then I also had to buy a an M.2 drive, and what they both came with keyboards, but I've bought more keyboards since then, and yeah, they work.
Okay, now hold on a second. I applaud you for what you did, sir, and that's brilliant. How much are those devices generally?
Okay,
if you went and bought it new, how much would it be?
Well, you can't buy them new.
Well, how much were they when they were new?
A lot.
That's what I'm talking about, right? Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Right now, though, if you go look, the i3-4120 version with 4 gigabytes of RAM, which no hard drive, but it comes with the keyboard on eBay, $90.
What's wrong with it?
Nothing. Pre-owned. It says it's fine.
Okay, well, what I'm saying is, regardless of how you get it, you can't just go buy, what I meant was, you can't go out and buy one of those off-the-shelf $100 laptop tablets, because they suck.
Because they're garbage.
Right. You need to get a tablet, and it's going to set you back at least a couple hundred dollars if you were to buy it brand new. To get a decent working tablet,
maybe closer to 1,000, because there isn't a whole lot in the actually works well category. You're looking at some kind of Windows
probably
tablet,
a Surface device,
a Surface device, or I think there's a couple of other companies. I think Samsung makes a high end Windows device, but yeah, the market is small for ones that actually work well. And you're looking at least $1,000.
Okay, so I didn't want to go that far because I'm not at all versed in the pricing of tablets, but I'll take your word for it. To which I say at that point, why the hell am I going to spend $1,000 on a tablet when I can do like half of that to get a far better phone than I have. And then I'll be probably happier than if I had the tablet, or get a laptop that's decent and be happier than if I had a tablet.
So, they're used, but the Dell Venue 11 Pro 7130, either the i3 or the i5 model, you can get for under $100, and it makes a really good laptop. I mean, it's still a fourth gen Intel device.
Right.
And you know what? And maybe that's.
And they're 10
I should
out
not
now.
Discount that. I should not discount that. But that's the thing. You know, it's like, I didn't think about that at first. I'm like, well, maybe I just step back a generation or two and get it used for under $100. How much were they selling those for when they were new? Were they like close to $1,000?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they were $1,000 devices.
Sounds right. Yeah. Yep. Or you get something stupid, like you get something like if you want to add, like my iPad, if I want to add a keyboard, if I want to add anything decent, I'm looking at least 100 for that. Unless I go with something that's a cheap Bluetooth keyboard. You know, if I want an actual keyboard with physical connections that actually uses four circles on the back where these pins attach to the back the iPad magnetically, then you're looking at least 100. So, and it's not any better on the Surface devices. So, and it's not any better on really other stuff too. Like the Jide was literally the perfect package for that kind of stuff. You know, but And what's even worse, though, is okay, so now, say I wanted to buy a Pinebook Pro. Can't. They're not shipping them yet. Again. I mean, they ran out of the first batch. They're not shipping. I don't know when they're shipping the next batch of Pinebook Pros. That's the thing.
But I don't.
Definitely spend $200 on that.
The thing about the Pinebook Pro is it's cool and everything, but I don't expect it to function as well as a $1,000 tablet.
Right. I know this first Pinebook definitely didn't do that. But then I ran it, and this is the other thing. You talk about accessories is usually what kills you on some of these tablets, like definitely on the iPad. And although the iPad is far easier to find accessories.
You know, what kind of accessories are you getting for an iPad?
Keyboard. You can get the Apple Pencil. I got a stand actually. It's not specific for the iPad.
At which point do you spend all that money? You turn it into a MacBook.
Well, yeah, that's a good point there too. You know.
Yeah, I looked it up, and it did start out at roughly $1,000.
That's what I thought. Yeah.
How old is that?
2014.
Yeah.
Oh, 2014. Oh my God.
7 years old, actually.
My equipment here calls that grandpa, I think, in 2014.
Mm-hmm. It still works. Yeah. Wow. It still works well. It's not even slow.
Yep. See, the one thing I'm trying to figure out, though, and I ran into this YouTube video where the guy says, my favorite iPad Pro accessory, which really that would go with mine, too, is the Raspberry Pi 4. And I'm like, wait a minute. Why is that? And I'm still trying to figure out why you would do it this way. I guess the only reason you would do it this way is if you weren't near a Wi-Fi network. So what he does, and this is actually something I didn't really know about the Pi 4, but the USB-C port can also act as an Ethernet port. So it's also got data on it as well. So what he does is he hooks it up to his iPad. The iPad powers a Raspberry Pi. He sets up a static IP address on that. You have to, I mean, I think beforehand you do have to set it up like using a monitor and all that, right? And he sets it up so that port has a specific IP address. And then when he attaches his iPad, it boots up in 30 seconds and he SSHs into it from his iPad. I'm like, wouldn't it just be easier if you had a mobile hotspot or something with you? Or a nano router, you know, something like that. You know, then you just, you know, don't have to hook it up to the iPad at all. So I'll have to rewatch that video again and see what exactly he does other than just SSH into it and write some code. That's essentially what he's doing mostly with it. And I'm like, you could do that just having that on your network, or you can set up a AWS instance or something like that if you really wanted something you can get to from everywhere. But like I said, I guess if you didn't have any Wi-Fi, this would be an option. So that's a $80 iPad accessory if you look at it that way, if you get at least the Pi 4 gig. So then other things are too, or you know, and this is why it's why I think the iPad right now is the only real viable tablet, because if you buy like a Samsung or Samsung's probably the other one, but if you buy something like a Joe Blow's tablet or something that's not like either an iPad, a Samsung Galaxy tablet, or an Amazon Fire tablet, trying to find like an accessory, like a case or something that you actually like, is difficult. So just thoughts on that tablet thing and how I wish there was a real viable Android tablet that didn't cost as much as an iPad. Because the Samsung tablets are freaking expensive.
$1,000?
Oh, yeah.
There you go.
You're between $800 and $1,000, depending on which one you get. But I think you can at least the S10 with a couple of the different Samsung tablets out there, I think. And I think it comes with it versus like with my iPad where you got to spend another $100 on it.
Well, you can keep your tablets.
Yeah.
I will.
Yeah. I'm going to go Joe's route. Buy me a $100 tablet from 2014.
Yeah.
And have it work really well.
One thing I thought about doing was buy like one of the higher end netbooks from that era, and then swap out like if it comes with a spinning hard drive, go get an SSD and put it in and see how that would work as a nice little knock around PC.
A netbook? Damn, that's like 2010, isn't it?
Oh. Yeah, but they are making, 11 and 12 inch laptops these days. So you could call that a netbook.
Yeah.
Right.
When I think of netbook, I think of like the Triple E PC.
Yeah.
Right. The E-PC.
Remember, what was the other one? The G. I had it.
You had the. Oh, that one was weird.
It started with a G.
And it was yellow.
Yes. And it was pretty damn cool.
I had a bunch of the Acer Aspire 1s.
Okay, my wife had one of those, I think. Was that the one with Linspire installed on it, or Linda?
Yeah.
No, the ones... because they made several generation of the Acer Aspire 1s.
That's true.
And basically all the ones I had were like the Windows XP variants, and then I just installed Linux on them.
Okay.
Yeah, I did watch like a video or two on the Pinebook Pro, and the one nice thing is that it at least has an upgradable eMMC. It also has an NVMe SSD slot as well, USB-C, USB 2 and 3, USB-C data power and video out, 10,000 milliamp battery.
It was the Sylvania G Netbook Meso.
That's right.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm with you on that. That was my favorite netbook was really one of the first ones, which was the original EPC. The one that actually had Linux on it from the get-go.
Yeah, that was the one that had, like, was it Linspire or Lindows?
No, it was something different. I'm trying to remember what was on the first one.
Triple EPC Linux OS. I thought it was based on...
Zandros.
It was based on Zandros, but was it?
Yes, Zandros, and then later on they loaded Windows XP.
It was called Zandros.
On it. Right. And didn't take much to put just plain old Ubuntu on it.
I remember that. I remember how that thing was set up. It was a pain in the ass.
What, you Meso?
No. The Triple EPC, it had...
Well, it's a 7-inch display.
Wasn't it? Didn't it use, like, what was it called? Cram FS? And so
the
operating system was on one partition, and you couldn't get to that. And it just had another like file system layered on top of it. It was like how it operated.
2007.
and you were very limited on the space that you had available to you.
Mm-hmm. Now, see, I had the 1000 HE at one point. Which had the Atom 280. And then I remember the one I had, the Lenovo convertible one. I can't remember that one. Wonder how much they went for, like, the last one that looks like, which is the Asus made, was in 2014, called the eBook. Yeah, the original EPC was the 701.
Right.
And I had remembered, I actually upgraded, I had an 8 gig SSD in it, and I think I upgraded it to a 16.
Just get yourself a GPD.
Yeah. They're almost as much as a real laptop.
Is that Game Parks? Wait, what does GPD stand for?
Game Park Design, I think.
Yeah, it's still Game Park, right? The GP2X, Game Park 2X. I still have that device somewhere around here.
GPD WinMax, $1,000.
Well, and they actually just announced the new GPD Win 3, which is actually a handheld game console.
Yeah, I'm not overly interested in that one. The keyboard looks like more garbage. But the GPD P2 Max, the 8.9-inch one, that one looks pretty cool.
And it looks like, see, what do they want for that Win 3? It's being crowdfunded, by the way.
Yeah, still not interested.
$949. No, thank you.
Wow! $949.
No, well, good.
Just wait till a couple years from now, Joe. You can pick it up for $94 on eBay.
Maybe, but I won't. I still won't be interested in that particular one. I mean, if I could pick up, like, the GPD Pocket 2 at a good price, I might.
Oh, I see. It has, like, a slide-up keyboard, like some of those Upsies. Remember those?
Yeah.
The Sony UX70 or whatever it was. I can't remember. I've crowdfunded stuff before, and I have no interest in doing it again.
Well, you know what? Did it not work for you?
No, I got it, the Aspen Hybrix PC, but it's, well, stuck at, like, I forget what version of Android it's got on it, but it's like 3 or 4 versions out of date. It's like, no thanks.
I think it was 3 years ago, 4 years ago. My wife saw something on Kickstarter, or no, it was Indiegogo, that she really wanted. It was the Sound Hero Bluetooth speaker. And you know, I was one of the first people to buy it and still haven't received it, but you can now purchase it on Amazon for a lot more than I paid for it. And I think there's it was in store in a couple of places. And I haven't received an update from them in 2 years. So flush that money down the drain.
Gotta love it, right?
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Well, that's like, now, if you look on the Kickstarter page for this Hybrix that I got, which I still have it, it's in storage. I haven't gotten rid of it. Because my hope is that it's close enough to a Pinebook that somebody might be able to figure out how to get an OS running on it that's not shit. But, you know, so I still haven't got rid of it. It's in storage now, but actually, one thing I haven't tried was, since my phone upgraded to Android 11, I have not tried Dex on my Superbook, which I do have that with me here. I don't know why I brought that with me, but
yeah. Linux on Dex isn't a thing anymore.
Oh, that's true too. Yeah, but Dex wasn't awful. So, but yeah, I'm Pinebook 4. I might be interested in once they're up for ordering again. And I think I have to go back, look at the Linus Tech Tips video on that, because I think he did do one on that.
On what?
I think on the Pinebook Pro.
Maybe.
I think he did, but I think they said that the RAM is upgradable on it. So I would definitely probably order that, and then a RAM stick, and maybe an M2 drive.
How much that cost?
That'd be under $300. And they call it the open source 64-bit ARM Chromebook replacement for work, school, and play. You can buy the Pine Time now. That's still orderable.
How much that run you?
I think it's cheap. It's like, you can get a Pine Time smartwatch 3-pack that will be 3 of them for $74 or $75.
Hmm.
Or you can get the Pine Time Smartwatch Dev Kit, which includes the watch, for $25. But you see, I don't know why I would want 3 of them.
'Cause 3's better than 1.
I guess. Now, if you didn't hear this, now it's been in the works for a while, but I think Google finally finished the acquisition of Fitbit.
You gonna get one?
I had one. I didn't really like it that much. I like my, I have a Michael Kors Wear OS based watch, and I liked it a little bit better. But I will say the app that goes along with the Fitbit actually is really good.
That goes on your phone, right?
Yep, that's how your phone notifications can go to the Fitbit. So like when somebody calls you, you can look on your watch and see, oh, that's a spam call. I'm going to reject that, because that's the only people that ever call me on my phone anymore. But excuse me. Yeah, Wear OS watches seem to be getting cheaper every day. I will not pay what Apple wants for their Apple Watch, because first off, the Apple Watch only works with iOS. At least if you buy a Wear OS watch, you can technically make it work with your iPhone if you really want to.
Well, first of all, you shouldn't have an iPhone.
Well, debatable. I have an iPhone because it's just my work phone. I'll probably just stick with that on that because I don't use it for anything but work phone. And now, I don't even think now. We used to send out RSA fobs, but since we use Okta, now everyone just uses a corporate phone.
Corporate phone. Is that what you have, a corporate phone?
Yep, that's my iOS device. It stays here. Unless I'm on call, then it goes with me. I mean, as a phone and for the things I do use a few apps on there for work. Specifically, what do you guys use for paging? Do you use PagerDuty?
Who are you asking?
Anybody.
For paging, Victor Ops.
Okay.
Like on call?
Yeah.
No, they just call me.
Okay. So yeah, we use PagerDuty, and that not only will that page you and can tie in with like Datadog, we're tying it in with that. So whenever there's a synthetic failure, it'll page the on call. But you can also go in, like, for example, say I had a last minute change and I needed to not be on call Friday and I swapped with a teammate. I can go right into the app and reschedule, basically put it over right in so that instead of paging me, it pages the teammate. So, and I actually like doing it on the phone better than I do in a browser, because they're the website design for PagerDuty sucks. I just don't like it. But and that's kind of going back in towards Datadog. That's like, we used to have like two or three different monitoring tools, but now we're going all the way whole hog on Datadog for doing that. And we're finally getting to do things like there's a lots of, I mean, Datadog's hugely powerful in what you can do. The synthetics are a big thing. So right. You know, we're basically just recording the web sessions and that replays every 5 minutes on all of our client machines, or 5 or 15, I can't remember. But it's going even further than that. I think one of the things that some other members of my team are working on is trying to write an API that, see, right now we have these Java processes we call, they're called DMI listeners. It's just what, it's a internal thing. It's our product, okay? And the initial monitoring we set up for those was looking for it at the process level. So we'll look in either Windows or Linux, and we'll look for that, the specific process that was named production_app_listener, and see if that was running. Well, there's only one problem, is every once in a while, a listener would basically stop taking requests for whatever reason. Okay? So the process is still there, so the monitor says, oh, everything's hunky-dory. Well, it's not. So working on trying to figure out a way with an API of sorts, so it can send like a query to that listener that will force it to respond back in a way. And then that way we know if that listener is actually functional, and then the monitor can move on, check the next one, you know? So hopefully that comes down the pike. And then as a company, we're actually going to be adding the ability to our software so that Datadog can consume the logs so that we can start creating monitors based on error messages that appear in the log. So, and ultimately, it's all going to boil down to is sometimes we'll respond to those with a real person, and sometimes we'll set up something in ASR, or automatic service recovery, so that if it detects a certain situation, it just goes ahead and automatically does something that we tell it to do, like restart the process or do whatever. So I'm excited about that stuff. And that's the one thing when I talk to my boss about things I want to learn this year, and this is not going to change even if I decide to become the tech lead, which I think I am. You know, I'm going to at least try to get it. But one of the things they want all our whole division to do is they all want us to get a certification of some sort. And I wish it was a certification on Datadog itself, because there isn't one. I don't think there is one. But I'm probably going to take a Udemy course on it, because the basic training just wasn't good enough for me. I want to know more. I want to get more deeper knowledge of it, because it gets very powerful. We can have it do a lot of things for us so that we're not caught by surprise with things. So, but ultimately, I do want to get the AWS Cloud Practitioner certification. So I'm going to start hunting around for an actual training course for that, because I want an online course where we can play with set up a VPC and set up stuff that's not ours, so that we can learn how to do things in AWS. So I don't want to have to learn while I'm playing with our real systems. That's never a good thing.
What, you don't test in production?
Try not to. But that's like I talked about this possible promotion here that I may be going for.
Does the possible promotion come with a possible pay raise?
Yeah, possibly. I don't know about that. For sure, but but that's actually the point. We were asking, you know, I was talking with the wife about that. She says, well, what is the benefit? I'm like, I am still employed? I'm like, I'm not exactly sure. You're asking me what's the benefit of a job I don't even have, you know? I'm assuming that it will come with a pay increase. I'm assuming that I know that I'll have more responsibility, because not only it'll be more of less of Joel working on grunt work and more of Joel working on planning work for future projects, more
transition. 2 a.m. meetings with the India team and
nothing like that. It's those those Indian guys never sleep, man. One of our guys on our team, like, I'll get every once in a while, I'll get a Slack from him, and I like him. He's a good guy. But I'll get a Slack from him at like 2 in the afternoon. I'm like, shouldn't you be in bed? But they're animals. But no, it's going to be more of, you know, like, for example, when an admin writes a change. And it's been peer reviewed by another admin. At that point, I can, if my manager is unavailable, I can approve the change to go to the change advisory board as my manager, and other things like that. So, you know, and I have to be, you know, real diligent when I do that, make sure that it has all the things that the cab looks for. So
you don't run your own cab?
I don't run it.
Oh.
No, we have a like, I don't know if my manager's on the cab. I know my manager, the manager I used to have previously was on the cab. I think she is, but. Plus then we could also like give the verbal approvals like in a matter of we've got an e-change, like a incident happening. We got an e-change. We can say, go ahead, do it. And then they write the change up after the fact. You know, because we
it's place... called a latent change.
Right. Well, that's what you call it. It's not we call it the knee change or emergency change. So.
Well, we have emergency changes, but emergency changes do require full approval unless they're a latent change, because something is severely broken and there is a high-level major issue going on that's costing the company money.
It's speaking of which, was anyone caught by the fiber cut in Brooklyn this week?
Oh, that affected Verizon?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, mostly Verizon, yeah.
No, I heard about it, but I wasn't impacted by it.
Yeah, some of our team were. None of our systems were.
Yeah, none of our systems were either, but it caused issues, like especially with Slack and other things and other services. Yeah.
We had now a couple people on my team had some weird issues connecting to Outlook, to our email server. Well, O365, because that's who we do email through. But, other than that, we were largely unaffected. We've never been hit by a AWS outage at all yet either, even though there have been some. But none since I joined the cloud team, so that's good. Well, okay, I take that back. None that I've actually been involved in. There might have been some that happened when I was off shift.
Well, we gotta wrap this up. Some of us gotta get to bed.
Those weights aren't gonna lift themselves.
That's right.
My gym's reopened. Now, technically, I have to think the gym at the apartment complex, I think, I don't know if it's still 24/7 now, but at least I can go in there without having to schedule something.
Your gym's open with the scheduling?
It's a farther drive, so he has to plan ahead.
Well, no, it's not. I have two that I can go to. I have the one that comes with my apartment, you know, that I can go over to where the rental office is, and that's where that is. And then there's a Planet Fitness, which is a little further away, but it's not that far away. But the one here, though, they had it where you had to schedule an appointment. I think you had to pick up the phone and schedule an appointment with them so that you can go to it. But that's now ended. They did that when the governor increased the lock. He never locked us back down again or anything, but they had a stay-at-home advisory. You know, so the stay-at-home advisory meant they advise you to stay home, but you can go out.
Have you been vaccinated yet?
No.
Sounds like a good reason to stay home.
Stay put. You want to hear a good story? Here's a good story about that. So, I said last fall, my daughter was in jazz band, how we didn't like it.
Right.
And so they stopped in-person jazz band right after Thanksgiving because they were concerned people coming back might have a problem. They fucking started it back up. It's worse now than it was after Thanksgiving. They started it back up this semester, and they were like, hey, we want you to come in and do in-person jazz band. My daughter's like, no, I'm not going to do it. The numbers here are terrible. And she's like, And we talked to the teacher, and he said, we could just try again in the summer, but this is what it is. You can't really do it virtually. You have to come in. They had to terminate it this week because one of the students came down with COVID. So if my daughter would have been in that class, chances are she could have caught COVID and the rest of us would have had fucking COVID. And that's why we are staying the fuck home until we get vaccinated.
Hmm. Heard that.
So I feel like I dodged a bullet, man. I feel like, thank goodness. Yeah. I don't need that kind of
thing. I'm trying to think. I don't know if it... I know, like, at least one of my cousins got it. Maybe a couple of them, because my cousin Cindy, she works for Carilion Healthcare in the Roanoke area.
She got vaccinated?
She got vaccinated. Yeah. She doesn't actually work with patients or anything. I think she just works in the accounting department. But she got vaccinated. And I'm pretty sure that my cousin Tom, his wife, also, she's actually a nurse. So I'm pretty sure she may have gotten it too. But
my neighbor got it a couple weeks ago, and she works in the hospital, but in an administrative position. So
right.
She doesn't work. So I don't know. I'm.
I haven't even got my asked name on it the yet because I'd rather. I haven't even asked yet because I want those who are more at risk than I am to get it first. Because I'm, to be honest, you know, I go out once or twice a week and that is it, you know, and that's just to, like, the grocery store, and, you know, I go to church, and when I'm both places, I'm wearing my mask and I'm not touching people, not getting close to people, you know.
Well, I hope you're not touching people even without the pandemic going on, right?
Well, that's so true, around too, Joel, you know? And I also try and go to, like, the one thing I wish that, you know, a year ago we had stores that were open 24 hours. You know, Meijer, and there was a Walmart. None of them are open 24 hours anymore because they closed down because they want to do that extensive cleaning every night. All right. And I kind of wish they'd open back up 24 hours a day because – what I would do if they were still open 24 hours a day is I would go at like 1 o'clock in the freaking morning just so that I can stay away from everybody. But now there's certain stores I won't, unless I'm desperate, I won't go to just because of the sheer amount of people. Kroger's, every time I go into Kroger's, it is fucking nuts, man. So many people. Well,
Kroger's here at least has, you know, curbside pickup.
Yeah, ours does too. But it, you know, I never think about doing that. In this, and plus, it's, I will say this, the Kroger's, since we moved the apartment, it's nowhere near as convenient as it was when we lived in the house in the south side. You know, down there, it was like less than 5 minutes away, right? Here it's a little bit more than that, probably about 15 or 20 minutes depending on traffic. Meijer is a little bit closer, that's why we go there, and they're a bigger store in general because they have clothing, and you know, they're basically a superstore, so they have more than just food. It's a lot easier to stay away from people there than it is at other stores. Because they just have more space to begin with. So, but Kroger's doesn't. So, but every time I go in there, it's just like, what am I doing here? There's so many people here. And I'd say that COVID or not now. Because,
yeah.
Yeah. I
don't say like... people, I say assholes.
Well, I have a generally higher outlook on most people, but yeah, there are the good share of assholes there, you know. So I mean,
Yeah, even if only 10% of the people there are assholes, that's way too many of them.
Oh, yeah, because, yeah, they're usually the ones that make it a problem for everyone. So, I mean, but, you know, so we're doing all right. Like, I think tomorrow, I think when I get up for work, I think we're going to throw some beef stew in the crock pot. I think that's going to be good.
Now I want to watch Spaceballs.
Spaceballs?
I'm surrounded by assholes.
Oh, shit. There goes the planet.
All right, we got to wrap this up here. I got the promos.
Aren't they making a sequel to that?
I hope not.
They've been talking about that since it came out.
Yeah. Spaceballs 2, the search for more money.
It's like them saying they're going to make a sequel to The Last Starfighter. We'll see if that happens.
Right.
The second last Starfighter.
Right. Dan's tired. Dan wants to go to bed, so let's let him end the show.
All right, here we go. Here's your promos. Thank you, everybody. Stay safe.
Oh, my God. It's Hacker Public Radio. Hacker Public Radio is a daily podcast by the hacker community for the hacker community. If you're interested in technology, creative thinking, hacking, Linux, or any kind of computer, that kind of stuff, you should listen to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.com.
Hello, my name is Matt, and I've started a new podcast called LibreQuest. I talk about Linux and general technical topics. To get the show, visit LibreQuest.org.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush. Shut up. Just shut up.
Daddy has a gun!
It's over.
Oh, you were making egg foo young in the kitchen. I was in the dining room having sushi.
Yeah. Yeah.
I finished second round of watching The Orville. All two seasons of it.
You watched the two seasons twice now?
Well, yeah, first time they came out when they were new, and just again.
Oh, you must really like that show.
It's all right.
What's it on?
Hulu.
Oh, okay. I've never watched an episode yet.
Oh, you should. It's pretty good.
I'll have to check it out. All right, say goodnight, Joel. Stop this.
Goodnight, Joel.
Well, I meant to do that. I thought I had another one, but apparently I can't find it, so I got to order one.
I got some more network cables coming. Some of the ones I have are shot, so I just ordered up some new patch cables, especially since it didn't cost me anything, because we got like a little like system called Bonusly at work, where basically you can give people points, and when you get so many points you can cash out for like a gift card, and that's what I did today.
All right. Dun 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 dun.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this channel, right, Joe? That's what he says, right?
Mm-hmm.
What should we do tonight? That's what it wants, that's what it gets.
We shoot this shit like we do every Wednesday night. thought Red had an 8 on a laptop.
The new one?
Yeah, 8.2.
That's the free one?
Using the developer license, yep. I was able to get updates and everything.
Hear about that in a minute. This is $8.91.
Mm-hmm.
$8.91 for 2021.
Yields.
You know, last week it was $8.90 for January 20th, 2021. This is $8.91 for 27/2021. Yeah.
Yeah, what he said.
Well, wait a minute. Let's see here. Before I do that, let's see. Huh. That's too bad. February would have been cool if it was like, if we had it on like the 20th.
That's next week.
Yeah, I know. It's going to be on the 3rd, 10th, 17th, and 24th. So no excitement in the dates there.
One minor setback with the home. And I say minor because it's probably already corrected.
2 or 3 years?
No, nothing like that.
23 years.
No, I went down to the property Sunday, and we have a screen room. We paid, you know, that's part of our deal, is we have a screen room. And they poured the pad for that on the wrong side of the house. So they probably already corrected it, but there was a whole pile of lumber down there, so it's still going to have framing very soon. If it hasn't already started.
How did they manage to pour it on the wrong side?
You got, well, it just makes me wonder, because this isn't the first time. When we built our first home, it had something similar. What a lot of these companies do is they'll have one blueprint, but based on other things in the neighborhood, like, for example, the other homes, like what kind of house is next to yours and stuff like that, will determine what side your garage is on, okay? The base blueprint has the garage on the right, okay? Why is that important? Well, because the screen room goes on the exact same side of the house as the garage, okay? So I get down there, and I'm looking, and I'm like, okay, this is not right, because our garage is on the left. So basically, they just mirror the blueprint. So what's built on the right normally is going to be built on the left. So like my bedroom is going to be in the back right corner of the house, and our screen room in the breakfast area is on the left-hand side of the house, which is right behind the kitchen and the garage and all that shit. So
in 2038.
No, more like 2021, dude. So. Doesn't take that long to build a house.
No.
No, it'll be fine. I got all the woods there. I mean, it's interesting too. The decking and stuff for the, like the floor. A lot of the things are prefab. So basically, you know, like the A-frames for the roof and all that, they're all put together. So it's basically just like putting together a big giant Lego sculpture practically, but with nails and screws. Probably more so than our old house was. And then they have a big pile of foam core insulation. Yep. They'll just put everything together. They're the hard part all there. And they got the electric and the furnace and all that stuff to put in, but that has to wait till framing's complete. Framing should take long. They were almost complete with one of the homes they started last week. You know, it only took them probably not even a week to get that far. You ready, Dan?
Yeah, I was just, oh, come on.